That means by now, it means that virologist Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD, will be back with us in just a minute or two. Let me run down a couple of headlines and make a point here. Apparently, the re-election virus has hit Donald Trump so hard that we have seen most of these White House press briefings on the coronavirus pandemic really devolve into nothing more than rather rude exchanges with Trump and the reporters. It's like high school kids matching off with each other. And they're all campaign appearances. Is what he can't do his rallies. He's announced the rallies are going to come back before November. Who knows when. But the pressure, the re-election pressure on the Donald is huge. And he wants to reopen the economy as fast as possible for obvious reasons. There are a couple of states now that do, they're not backing down. They're requiring citizens to wear face masks in public, which is fine by me. I think it's a smart move. I've called for that in the past. Till this thing goes away or goes wherever it's going to go, which may not be very far, masks should be the order of the day. It's common sense. There are a number of stories about demonstrations and protests now about the lockdowns and stay-at-home orders and so forth. It gets to be pretty obvious that there will be increasing social unrest as long as the lockdown orders and stay-at-home orders are in effect. Maybe that's the design. I don't know. We're watching it very closely. But a lot has happened since Friday. So let's get right to Henry and find out what the latest is. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Well, good to be back. And a lot has been going on, both with the briefings as well as with the cases and the prospects for what's going to happen with the lockdowns. And probably it's not going to be a positive outcome. But anyway, let's go through the numbers a little bit. As expected, the U.S. hit the 40,000 death mark yesterday, up over 42,000 dead as of today. And
you called it. You call it exactly
right on track
Friday.
to get to 60,000 dead by the end of the month. Yep. Still averaging over 2,000, a little bit less than 2,000 today, but that's based on Sunday reports. Sunday reports aren't always 100%. So tomorrow will kind of determine whether the 2,000 deaths a day will continue. It might drop a little bit. There is a seasonality aspect of it that could impact a little bit. And the lockdowns have been, in force. The biggest contributor to the death toll is New York. New York has seen a drop in deaths in the last several days. And it looks like it's already hit the peak and is on the downward slope. It's not clear how quickly it's going to go down. Today was the first day below, I think it got in the 400s, so below 500. And like I say, it's not clear whether that is a real number, whether it's going to get back between 5 and 6 where it's been, or if it really is getting dropping that quickly. It's relatively quickly. It was up around 700 for about a week or so, and then the last several days it has been dropping. But the biggest drop, or at least the first drop below 500, was today. But that may be because it's Sunday reports. It's what today's number is. But the U.S. Is still approaching 800,000 cases now. You know, the numbers are new cases today were almost 26,000. So the new cases are still coming in at a very high rate, between 25 and 30,000 per day. And the deaths are kind of a lagging indicator. So part of the reason the deaths are going down is, like I said, it's heavily dependent upon New York. And New York had this dramatic spurt about 2 or 3 weeks ago, probably 3 or 4 weeks ago now. And so the deaths are related. The deaths that got up to close to 800 a day was really related to that spurt, because the deaths are a lagging indicator. And now it is getting more to a more even keel. Some of the beds have opened up because of the large number of deaths every day, plus some discharges. And so even though the number of new cases is still very high, it's down a little bit off its peak. And it's not quite as hectic in New York as it had been. But some of the other states have kind of picked up the slack. Yesterday, Pennsylvania had by far its largest number. It had almost, I think it was about 270 deaths in one day, which is a record for sure for Pennsylvania. It was closer to 100 today, but again, today's results is really reflecting what happened on Sunday. And several of the other states are still very high. Massachusetts is over 100. I think the Boston Globe published, I don't know, many, many pages of obituaries today, to kind of listing the large number of deaths that happened there every day. Another big jump today was Connecticut had 200 deaths, but they said that was partially makeup of samples that had been sent in and hadn't been they hadn't gotten the results. That's one of the major issues, is the testing. The kits are limited. They're running out of reagents now, running out of swabs. Trump said that he got an order for, I think it was 10 million a month or so for swabs, but it's not clear when that's going to start. It's a signed contract. So there's still going to be a problem there because of all the cases in Europe and around the world now. There's the reagents are running out. So kind of like you need all the ingredients to complete a test. And so some of the numbers as far as cases and deaths may be undercounts because of a limitation in kits. That seems to be the case here in the Pittsburgh area. Pennsylvania started releasing cases that were in long-term care facilities and nursing homes. And they had one set here in Pittsburgh that's actually run by the county, and it's a there are four different locations. One of the locations had a major outbreak with something like 60 or 80 positives. I think it might have been 60 patients and 20 staff. Uh-huh. And they've got four facilities, and so they've got at least one staff member at each of the other three that are positive. And they, the patients and staff in the four facilities combined, I believe, is over 900. And the three facilities, that they've only got a limited number, they've only done a limited amount of testing, and they said they don't have the test kits to actually do the testing. And they know they need to test more and probably all, because at the first facility, many of the positives were asymptomatic, so they can't just rely upon how the patients appear. I think they've got four deaths so far, but they've got several more in the hospital. And it's unclear if some of these asymptomatic cases are going to remain asymptomatic, or whether this is just pre-symptomatic, where they're positive and don't have symptoms yet, but they're going to develop symptoms. These are, you know, these types of facilities, they usually have a high fatality rate. And if they got that many that are positive, it's not clear that they're all going to end up staying asymptomatic. But that's an example where, you know, many in eastern PA, it's the same thing. Two of the counties outside of Philadelphia, Montgomery and Delaware counties, also seem to have a large number of nursing homes, and that in part was the reason that it got up to 280 deaths or so yesterday. It's not clear all of them are being tested or reported. They probably have the same issue with testing. I'm not as familiar with eastern PA as western PA, but there's a reasonable chance the same thing is happening there. So there's actually more cases that are being reported. And it looks like, you know, as far as these lockdowns are concerned, Pennsylvania, I think the announcements are they're going to start lifting gradually some of the limitations on May 8th, I think, is the target date for May 8th or May 9th, one or the other. And so they're going to start lifting, even though Pennsylvania is like fourth in the country now on cases. There's over 33,000 cases in Pennsylvania.
As you said, that as New York is diminishing a little bit, other states are moving up and may even rival New York at some point in the future. Here's the other issue that I wanted to bring up. This is important. You mentioned testing. The University of Washington School of Medicine went to great lengths to airlift tens of thousands of coronavirus test kits from China during a nationwide shortage, the big shortage, all right? Well, it seems that some of these kits are contaminated and they're not able to be used. Washington's University of Washington Medical School has decided to halt, at least temporarily, the use of all these testing kits from Lingren Precision Medical Products after a small percentage of the kits showed signs of contamination. University of Washington. I started there, and now we're back there. Interesting. They're very disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, they've done quite a few sequences, so they definitely, you know, the positives that they're sequencing are clearly real positives. I mean, contamination, the CDC finally acknowledged that that's what happened with their test, that it was contamination, and that's why
they
the tests were not
malfunctioning.
Performing.
They were contaminated. Ah, funniest thing, how they didn't tell us that.
Well, the whole facility was. Well, it was out there. They kind of indicated that one of the issues was possible contamination, but it was the last few days that they acknowledged that definitely was the problem. And it was contamination at the lab that was putting together the test kits.
The three-part test kits. Okay.
So that was one of the reasons there was such a delay and why they were, after they were distributed to the states, they were recalled. And that contributed to the whole delay and tracking. Mm-hmm. It's real hard to look at the contact tracing when you've got a limited number of kits and then you get backlogged. Yeah. And so the whole plan on, easing the lockdown when they have a bunch of kits so that they can start monitoring. I mean, the whole
see how it's going.
Which seems to get lost, I think, in some of these discussions. But the idea was to keep the lockdown on until the case numbers start going down, and then the case numbers get low enough that mm-hmm. you can closely monitor to see if it's going to turn around and go back up. And not only monitor, actually do contact tracing so that you can kind of keep it under control. That you're essentially going to identify people early. You're going to interview the contacts. You're going to test the contacts. You're going to quarantine, generally home quarantine, but, have the contacts home quarantine so they aren't going to spread right. the virus and therefore limit it so that if there are new cases, those new cases will be monitored closely enough so that that won't lead to an explosion of cases. The problem with that is that there's more and more data suggesting that an awful lot of Americans actually have been infected. And
442,000 people. Well, almost 500,000 people in L.A. County may have already had coronavirus. This is an antibody
right.
study. That's
right,
what you're talking
right.
about.
And there was another one. There was another one up in Santa Clara, and that
80 times more cases than they thought. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so the question is, how accurate is the antibody test, and is that what the numbers are? Another study in New York did pregnant women, and there they found 13.5% were positive for the virus. So that was 13.5% were infected at the time of the test and during their pregnancy. So, the antibody test might be even higher because others may have been previously infected and had
right.
recovered from the infection and therefore tested negative for the virus, but would have been positive for the antibody. The problem with the antibody test is that it's kind of the Wild West, and a lot of different companies have come out with the antibody test, and how well calibrated they are and how accurate the antibody titers are. And then more importantly, if they're going to use that for determining who's immune and can go back to work because they've got resistance, that if you're going to take it down to that level, to the individual person, then the test has to be pretty accurate if they're going to rely upon that test to assume that they
right.
they are immune. And then there's not enough data yet on exactly what titer does confer immunity and would keep you from getting infected. And then there's the issue of the virus itself potentially evolving away from protection and the current version of the virus. And
right. Here's a story
on
that.
So the antibody test.
Yeah. Here you go. This helps.
Sure.
This is exactly what you're saying. Coronavirus's ability to mutate has been vastly underestimated, and mutations affect the deadliness of the strains. This is a new Chinese study. because the mutations can dump a whole lot more virus on somebody real quick than some of the other strains, which are lower in viral load. It says here, the most aggressive strains of SARS, I love this, COV-2, which is an awful close similarity to SARS 2.0, isn't it, Henry? Generate 270 times as much viral load as the least potent type of the coronavirus that we're dealing with now. And New York may have a deadlier strain imported from Europe, which you've said from the beginning, you were the first,
right,
the Italian strain, compared to less deadly viruses, strains of this virus, the ORF8 strain, for example, elsewhere in the U.S., like it used to be the case in Washington. So this story just came out. I'll read the first graph. A new study by one of China's top scientists has found the ability of the new coronavirus to mutate has been vastly underestimated, and different strains may account for different impacts of the disease in various parts of the world. Professor Li Lanzhuan and her colleagues from Zhejiang University found within a small pool of patients many mutations not previously reported. These mutations included changes so rare that scientists had never considered they might occur.
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the differences that, you know, they kind of zero in on the spike protein. And there are other changes like that ORF8. I mean, ORF8 was associated with this 29 nucleotide deletion in SARS, and that was kind of the version that was associated with a much higher fatality rate and a much more transmissible virus. And that's part of the reason I was kind of interested in the ORF8 lineage. But that was a nucleotide change that led to a protein change, but a single amino acid change as opposed to the other mutation, which was 29 nucleotide deletion. So that changed the reading frame and dramatically changed the protein. But it's possible that individual mutations in other genes can lead to some dramatic changes also. And as I've said before, viral load is important. And so it may not be so much changes in the receptor binding domain or the spike protein. It may simply be changes in how quickly the virus can grow. So that involves other genes. I mean, the virus encodes its own polymerase gene, which copies the genetic information. So if there's a change in the polymerase gene and it can copy its genetic information more quickly, that can lead to a higher viral load. And as far as the transmissibility is concerned, this virus is already known to be very transmissible. And it already has this polybasic cleavage site, which allows it to enter cells that have the furin protease. And that's fairly widespread. So that's part of the reason the virus is able to get into different cell types. So if the virus can already get into different cell types and there's a mutation in the polymerase gene that leads to higher viral load, all that combination alone
can cause all
kinds of problems as far pathology and lethality is concerned.
Different cell types.
And
kidney, liver, brain, heart, all right, this is, it's just turning this into a three-ring circus for the virus with that polybasic cleavage. That's amazing.
Yeah. And that's the reason the virus is such a concern. And that's also the reason, you know, scientists have been very concerned about the virus basically causing massive casualties, and that's what led to the lockdowns, is that there really isn't a proven antiviral yet. There's not a vaccine yet. The vaccine has to worry about enhancement, so it's not like you can rush that out. First, you got to show that it works, and then you got to show that it doesn't cause problems with subsequent versions of it. So, so the vaccine is probably going to take a while, and there's a lot of clinical trials that have started, but. Yeah, I think
we're way down. Yeah. No, this is way down the road from being a big assist or a boost to us.
And so the problem is that if indeed these high, well, it's clear that a lot of people have been infected, and some people kind of look at that as, oh, if there's a lot of people infected, then the denominator is a lot higher, the case fatality rate's a lot lower. And that kind of misses the whole point. And the point is that, the fatality rate, if you look at it, if you measure using numbers that you can come up with something that you can compare to earlier ones, you basically just look at the ones that go into the hospital with pneumonia, which is what was done for SARS. And then you can see how this compares to SARS because you've got a discrete population. It's not like, well, how many people really are infected? And the number that really are infected varies widely region by region. So to kind of take a sampling of a small group and then extrapolate that to the whole country is very tricky. That is, you know, it seems pretty clear that the rate is higher in New York than it is in, the Midwest, and probably even higher than it is in California. So you can get one number for California, another one for New York, and another one from Omaha, you know, in Nebraska or something. And those numbers are going to be very different. But if you just kind of look at who comes into the hospital with and has pneumonia, so they're a severe case, and then figure out what's the frequency of getting out of the hospital or dying, then you can get a case fatality rate that you can make comparisons on. And the case fatality rate for this virus is clearly is higher than it was for SARS. And it's and so that high rate is a concern. And how many people go to the hospital is a lot easier to count than, you know, how many people might be infected. Now the infection is a concern because of the contact tracing and trying to get things under control. If the number infected is much, much higher, so if it really is 10-15% of the population in some areas or even 5% in other areas, that's a lot of people. And trying to monitor those contacts and trace them and quarantine them is very difficult. And that's why things change to a mitigation when the numbers started to get very high. And the problem is that as the lockdown gets eased, there's a strong chance, even in the off season, even as, over the summer, that the numbers are going to start going back up, and they could go back up very dramatically, and then convincing the country to go into another lockdown would be probably problematic, especially with, a new school year coming up. Everybody's kind of written off the current school year and figured that the schools are just going to be closed or it's going to be, just done online. And, but many are expecting the things to kind of get back to normal in the fall. And I think that likelihood that that's going to happen is very, very remote. That, there's way too much virus around.
It's coast to coast, as you said long ago. It's coast to coast. It's everywhere.
And even with the lockdown, there's still 25,000 new cases a day. And part of that is starting to show up in the Midwest, where the number of cases has been low up till now. And a lot of those increases are showing up in meatpacking facilities. And that is because, you know, A, they're kind of essential workers, so that, you know, they're basically going to work in all states. It's not like they're subject to the lockdown. And those facilities really, I mean, it's kind of production line and stuff. I mean, I've actually worked in those plants. I've worked in the Chicago stockyards back when I was back in the '60s.
Henry Nyman
actually
worked in the Chicago stockyards. I never would have guessed.
Back in the late '60s, that is what I mean. The descriptions of the plants today are exactly like they were 50 years ago. I mean, it is a conveyor belt, and you're almost shoulder to shoulder, and the locker rooms are small, so even when you have a break, you're in close contact, and the eating rooms are also crowded, and there's no real social distancing in those workplaces.
Well, there can't be, like, just by virtue of the way they're set up to operate. It just won't work.
Right. So it's just a production facility, you know, to maximize production. And so it's very easy for the virus to spread in those facilities. And that's
happening over and over.
The Smithfield one has got up to 900 now, you know, employees and contacts. Those are going up, and there's several other ones that are.
I got a laugher for you. You ready?
Yeah.
Iowa. Hundreds of National Guard troops are being activated in Iowa as the coronavirus sweeps through meat processing plants, plural, in a state that accounts for about one third of the U.S. pork supply. Now, so they're going to send the guard in there. How the hell are they going to stop the transmission of the virus in these plants? It's not going to happen. If the people are in there working, they're going to be spreading the virus. Jeez.
Right. I'm not sure what the role of the guard is. You're
going to scare the virus, Henry. You're going to scare the hell out of it.
Well, the thing that's going to get scary is going to be the food supply, because several of these meat packing plants are in the Midwest, and a lot of these are associated. There's South Dakota, and there's Iowa. They're adjacent states, and these plants might be in one state, and the same company might have a plant in a second state, and people from the same families could be going to both because they're, you know, maybe 100 miles apart, and they kind of live in between. You know, it's kind of a 45-minute drive one way and 45 the other way. And the workers are going to bring the virus home, and they're going to bring it to, you know, other facilities that they go to shop at, and these rural, you know, locations don't have the type of, infrastructure as far as the healthcare is concerned. So it's not like they've got all these.
No, they're going to send the guard, Henry.
Ventilators there.
Locked and loaded.
And it's, well, they're not going to be that so much, because I actually saw an interview of the, I think he was the sheriff in Waterloo, which is where one of the plants is, or a couple of the plants, I think, were there. And he's getting concerned because, you know, it's like the company isn't really addressing this very, you know, directly. They're doing testing. I think they tested 500 in each plant of these two meat processing plants. I think they got a couple hundred positives in one and 100 in the other. And, you know, if you've got those types of numbers in the plants, those numbers are only going to go up. And so right now, I think the plants are still operating. It's not clear how much longer they're going to be able to stay open.
I got more on that. Another one is shut down. All right. And we're not hearing about this. The disruptions are stoking concerns for eventual fresh meat shortages in grocery stores. Imagine that. As well as leaving some farmers without a market for their animals. That's pushing down prices for hogs and cattle while making meat more expensive. Wholesale pork posted its biggest three-day gain in 6 years. At some point, this is a quote, we're going to have to be talking about euthanizing the hogs, and we're not far from it. This is a man named Reynolds who owns one of these companies. He said that would be devastating, not only for the food supply, but for the cost of food going forward across the board. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced a $19 billion bailout to help farmers, blah, blah, blah. But on Monday, that's today, JBS SA, it's another plant, said it was closing its pork plant in Minnesota. Governor Tim Walz had raised the possibility that some workers there, get this one, may have fallen ill from another outbreak at a Smithfield Foods plant in South Dakota. What does that tell you? Workers in Minnesota at a pork plant become infected after the Smithfield pork plant in South Dakota goes down to coronavirus. That means that they were sending pork from one plant to the other and it was contaminated with virus.
Well, it could be the people, too. You know, they go back and forth. I mean, that's what one of the problems is that you've got the same company. It's got different employees, and they sometimes are going to go from one plant to the other. And I mean, they got the same thing. I'm reading for Waterloo. This is beef. It's Tyson's and National Beef. Apparently.
Yeah, same story.
They had 27 Tyson employees that were positive, 19 National Beef employees were positive. And
we don't know how many they're testing. We don't know. They didn't say they tested everyone.
Yeah. No, they didn't test everybody, but they said...
Going after symptomatic people, I'll bet.
I think today they said they tested a total of 500 at each one, but I'm not sure how many people they actually have at each plant. And it's just a difficult situation.
What you said earlier is extremely important, and I've been saying it as well. The food chain. The links are beginning to show cracks and fractures, and a couple of them have already broken. If this trend continues, and any large corporation that produces consumer food products could fall under the same rubric of becoming infected and being shut down. And I'm telling you, everyone, you better go out and do the damn best you can to bring some food home. You can always eat it later if you don't need it. But this could cascade very quickly and become really critical. And you don't want to be in the wrong place when that happens. And that means with no food.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back in the day, in the 60s, we used to get products brought in from IBP, which was... Iowa Beef Packers, and Iowa Beef Packers, I think, is currently one of the largest packing house for beef in the U.S. And not surprisingly, Iowa Beef Packers is in Iowa, and so I'm not sure exactly. I'm sure they've got multiple facilities, sequences from Iowa have been released, and they are all the Italian strain. So the Italian strain is definitely in Iowa, and they have a lot of packing plants for beef and pork in Iowa. So they got all that corn they grow too. So in any event, that is a concern, that it is spreading, and it's not clear yet how aggressively they've been testing. It's not, you know, obviously they've been doing some testing because they keep coming up with positives, but right. It's not clear. Because Smithfield hadn't tested everybody yet at the end of last week. I don't know if they got it higher, but I think there were 3,700 people at that one plant. And then, of course, there's a lot more at the adjacent plants that sometimes get those products. So, and that's the reason, you know, taking the lid off these places, in these locations, there's not much of a lid on, but it's showing that, you know, it's already spreading there. Apparently, there's major outbreaks now at various prisons. That I think there were something like 1,800 in Marion County in Ohio that were positive.
1,800 prisoners. Ouch.
Right.
They'll never stop that.
At one facility.
Oh my!
At a single facility, and and there's nothing special about that facility or other, you know, compared to other facilities in Ohio or throughout the country, and so there's concern that there'll be that type of spread, and that, you know, if it's in the prison, it's going to go to the correction officers that are going to leave the prison.
Oh, they'll take it home.
How it got in there, you know. And and so it'll spread from those locations, and then the same thing's happening with the nursing home. That I think there's new regulations on reporting. I thought they were all supposed to be reported, but it sounds like some of the reporting might have been somewhat lax, and then some of the associated testing also seems to be lagging. So the 25,000 cases that are being reported is probably an undercount, because they've got these facilities where there are known outbreaks, and they haven't tested those that are at that facility, and they're all going to have some level of exposure by just being there, especially, you know, the one I had said the high percentage were asymptomatic. Yeah. And so if they aren't testing, they have no idea how many are positive. And so these are already kind of, you know, already cooking. You know, the virus is already at the facility. It's already spreading at the facility. And there are a lot of such facilities when you take, you know, these meat processing plants and prisons and long-term care facilities. And what's being reported is really just the tip of the iceberg, either because they haven't been tested because they're short of kit, or they haven't been tested because they're not required and they don't want to really, notify relatives.
Right.
And now, that's supposed to be changing, so that it's going to be mandatory that if they got an outbreak, they have to let others at the facility know that there is
another quickie. The Purdue Premium Meat Company in Michigan, in St. Clair Shores, and I'll bet it's not the only one, is announced that they're hiring. Now hiring. Purdue Premium Meat Company is hiring for production laborers, packaging, smokehouse, and kitchen. Those are the departments. Have you been temporarily laid off due to COVID-19? Well, Purdue, Alexander, and Hornung is an essential business, and our production is higher than ever, providing protein products to businesses around the region. Protein products to other businesses around the region. So it goes on from there.
Well, I mean, they are trying to keep the food supply going, and they're obviously busy, and people are, you know, stocking up on food.
But they're not giving these people PPEs to wear. If they're lucky, they'll have a mask. That's it. Yeah. Remember the story about if you jog down the same jogging path as someone who's infected with a heavy viral load an hour ahead of you, you can still get it in the air because it hangs in the air for over an hour in micro-sized aerosolized droplets. So you go into one of these plants that are just full of aerosolized blood it's just, you're asking for it. I'm telling you. Yeah, I don't see how
it's the same thing. It's the same thing as the nursing homes. I mean, they're saying they're short on PPEs there, so the employees, you know, don't really have the right equipment. So it's easy for the staff to be infected, right, and then for them to infect their families when they go home, and so there are all of these areas that are all over the country that are basically full of virus, and many of them are currently being underreported. So the numbers are currently actually higher than are showing up, and they're still reporting 25 to 30,000 new cases every day in the U.S. So the issue is that even if the numbers do start to go down, once the rest of the workforce kind of gets out of their homes and starts going back to work, there's a high likelihood that, new cases are going to just start popping up and the numbers are going to start going up again. And then it very well may get worse in the fall. So the virus is in enough locations now to kind of hang around for the summer, even if it goes down. It'll be positioned to go back up. And it's not like you can do any travel bans or limit travel out of the country or into the country. It's already here. I mean, the U.S. has got more virus than any country in the world. And it's not like it's more like it's plateaued than it's dramatically declining. And so even if there are, and if you notice the rules on the decline, they didn't really say how much it had to decline. They just said it had to decline for 2 weeks. And so if it starts at a high point and it goes down for 2 weeks, they say, well, we've met the requirement, now we can kind of lift the lockdown, then the level may already be relatively high. And with limited tests, kits, it's going to be hard to monitor positives in the workforce as well as positives in contacts of the workforce. And so it's going to be very easy for the virus to expand and start going back up again.
Here's another more than one governor, several states are saying unequivocally that the Trump administration is blocking their access to vital health protection products for their workers, PPEs, masks. Trump is stopping the states from acquiring professional protection. These are impeachable offenses.
They're intercepting them and putting it into their stockpile.
They're warehousing them and selling them. This is, oh my God.
And the governors are bringing them in undercover. They're basically chartering planes and bringing them in.
Disguising
the trucks that they're getting loaded into. they look like they're food trucks, and they're taking different routes, and they're still getting intercepted because Homeland Security probably knows all the suppliers, and they probably
unbelievable
where they're shipping products to, and did they go intercept the products even though they may be disguised because they're Well, in one way, they're probably looking to see if they are being smuggled in. So when the governors go and try to bring these in undercover, they look like they're smuggled black market products. And so there's probably different safeguards to kind of look for that. And so they're getting intercepted, even though, I mean, they're getting intercepted probably because they look like
this is they're being really
they're coming in undercover. And,
the whole thing.
So that's what the problem is. The problem is that lifting the ban is not going to be easy. There's plenty of virus around. It's going to go up. There's people that are already tired of the ban. It's already hit the economy. The unemployment rate's going up. But there's no easy solution. And Trump certainly isn't helping the situation. We're talking about liberate different states.
Yeah.
The states he's asking to liberate have very high levels of virus. I mean, if the governors are following his guidelines, they're not supposed to be lifting the ban.
He's advocating civil insurrection and unrest.
Yeah.
Look, our whole system is beginning to show signs of breaking down. When we have states forced to smuggle in PPE under the nose of the federal government and the Department of Homeland Security, we got a problem. Big problem. This is not a joke.
We got a real big problem. And as lockdowns get eased, the problem is just going to get worse.
So. It is. All right, Henry. Thank you.
That's kind of where we are.
Yeah. I'll talk to you tomorrow night. Okay. Good job.
Okay. Stay safe.
All right. Thank you. And all of you, thanks for being here tonight. We'll be right back with you tomorrow evening as well as we continue to track the way things are. Not the way we wish they are, the way they are in fact. Talk to you tomorrow night.